Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Hey, it's J. Michael Michael here for LA Talk Radio, and if you're like me and you love talk radio, but you can't find anything worth listening to on the AM dial, then how about this? How about you tune into LA Talk Radio? See, LA Talk Radio is the biggest and the best deal. We are indeed.
Hello?
Biggest and the best in LA, and is .com, so we have it all from sports to music to self-help to just about anything, including talk. And right now we have the new writer's favorite show, The Writer's Block. So sit back, pour some more wine, grab another box of chocolates, and enjoy, because it all starts right now.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Bob Brill. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey. Very young, every star's a wishing star that shines for you. April love is all.
All right, Bobby Jean has to put the wine away and pour some milk.
Bobby, are you with us? Bobby Jean, don't tell me we lost her again.
Oh my! I told you she went to get a glass of milk.
Oh God, that's not what you said, but okay. This is LA Talk Radio, and you're listening to The Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina, in studio with Bob Brill, and eventually Bobby Jean Bell is going to join us. I don't know when, but of course this is live radio, and anything's liable to happen.
Yeah, well, yeah, she's floating around. What do we call it now? In the ozone? Internet somewhere.
She's up there in the dirty air.
Yeah.
Oh, somebody's here. Oh, I don't know. Anyway, hey, Bob.
Hey, Gremlin.
God. You know, I come here and I sit. I go, what's going to go wrong tonight? Well, I found out.
Well, you know, I got here just a little bit late. I was stuck in traffic and had to do some other things and was rushing, and tried to get a slice of pizza on the way here and couldn't because nobody would sell me a slice. So
not
I had
New
to
York.
Grab two. Yeah, I know. I had to grab two tacos, which, you know. That
it's kind of the same as a slice.
Almost.
Okay.
I wanted the carbs, you know. I just kind of wanted one of those things and go home after eat dinner afterwards. But, you know, so I come in. Jim and I are talking. We're sitting here 10 minutes waiting, and nothing's going on, so we're just waiting. And all of a sudden, we try to get everybody online, and nobody's there.
And nobody's there, yeah.
We had some British lady telling us that
the person that we're trying to reach is not available.
Not available, yeah.
So, anyway.
Is that Bobby Jean? Did she just call in?
I don't know. Did you just join us, Bobby Jean? Oh,
no,
I guess not.
Guess not.
Anyway. We have tonight on this show a young lady that makes her home in Iowa, and her name is Kimberly Stewart, and she's the author of 8 novels, including the Heidi Elliott series, Sugar, from Skyhorse Publishing in 2017, and her most recent book, Heartland, which I just finished this morning, Howard Publishing, Simon & Schuster, in 2018. Her books have been featured in Cosmopolitan. I told you, Kimberly, forgive me.
Even had a drink.
And I have not had a drink in weeks. Her books have been featured in Cosmopolitan, Huffington Post, the Chicago Sun-Times, and they've been carried by Walmart. Well, there's a lofty ambition. Target, Barnes & Noble, and hundreds of booksellers nationwide and on the web. Kimberly has a passion to write chemistry-driven, smart, character-rich romance that requires a reader neither to leave her brain at the door nor to visit a confessional after turning to the last page. I will attest to that. Stewart has made her home in Minneapolis, Houston, Chicago, Costa Rica, Nebraska, and Iowa, where she now lives with her brave husband, Mark, and 3 wily children. Would you please welcome to the writer's block, Ms. Kimberly Stewart.
Hi, it's so great to be here. I love the wind-up, the intro. I feel like I should be, you know, there should be spotlights or something.
Well, there should be, except there's only one problem with that. You wrote it. So if it's a lie,
it's
guess what?
Well, you, times, I don't know.
The other problem is you live in Iowa.
Yeah.
Hey, Al. Now, listen, I have relatives in California, so I will play nice with you if you play nice with me.
We, of course, will play nice with you because that's how we roll here at the Writer's okay, Block. I remember we talked the other night about that one thing this book was missing was the definite absence of language and scenarios and death and destruction and blood and gore.
Basically, what he's saying is there was no sex and nobody died.
Right. Pretty much what I said.
Oh,
however, they did talk about
it. Did you miss it?
No,
Jim,
actually,
I feel like I'm disappointing you.
You know, it's just like it's like you get into the book and you're going, okay, are they going to hook up now? No, damn it. But it does feed the next page.
It doesn't feed a 13-year-old boy, is what you're telling
them. No, it doesn't feed them.
I have one of those at my house, and my books sit on the coffee table. So, you know.
Uh-huh.
Well, yeah.
I don't think any 13-year-old boy needs to read his mother's
idea. Well, yeah, and if you even wrote them like that, you would have to keep them locked up in your nightstand.
Exactly.
You know, and then they would know where they are anyway. So,
which brings me to, may I ask the
question? Of course you may.
Which brings me to my first question, and I have to bring this up because my wife is always telling me that you know, parts, whether it's TV, movies, or books, women's parts seem to be written by men, and that she gets kind of upset because she goes, I don't know any woman that talks like that. I don't know any woman that says those things. I don't know. Like in I guess we're watching Barry lately, and oh, I know. The TV show, I don't know if you've watched it, it's Dead to Me with Christina Applegate. And the F-bomb is dropped by these women constantly, as well as the P-word, you name it, it one after another. And my wife's always getting asked, I don't know any women that talk like that. And you write like she would think that women talk. Tell me about that, and where do you sit on that side of the fence?
Wow.
Well,
we have her breathless. We have her speechless.
Oh, what was that? Sorry, you're cutting out.
Oh, we're just waiting for you to answer the question.
Oh, fantastic. I'm trying to go to a different spot in my house because I'm struggling to hear you. So I'm going to sit in the car and see if that helps.
Okay.
Yeah. So I would say the language piece, I've written a whole bunch of... the through line of all the things that I've written are kind of a banter-driven, chemistry-driven, dialogue-driven romance. So you're right. I don't have people hopping in the sack very often. I'm sure they do. I just don't describe it.
Right.
And as far as the language piece, I like to say that if you like Tom Hanks' Meg Ryan movies, remember those? Remember
Oh, sure.
Yeah, I want to write that. I think I'm writing for my friends, and when my friends and I are together on the weekend, 9 times out of 10, someone will bring up at some point one of those movies, or we'll laugh about that that genre. And so I feel like there's a space on the shelf for that.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we should be able to include a lot of different kinds of stories.
Sure.
And, I probably have to agree with your wife that most of the women I know are not dropping F-bombs every couple sentences. I feel like it's actually pretty challenging to write 85,000 words without resorting to a lot of that. I do have mainstream titles as well. This Heartland was under Howard's Christian imprint, and so that, you know, they have their own style book that I needed to follow.
Sure.
I've also written mainstream romance, and that has been, and I even hesitate to say romance because it's usually pretty character driven, but the mainstream pieces, I showed it to my grandma, and my grandma would say, well, you know, there's some farm language in there. And then she'd wink, which meant I've used all those words. So, you know, I feel like if it helps move this story along, I'm all about it. I mean, I wrote a book called Sugar, which is centered, it's set in high-pressure, high-end commercial kitchens in New York and in Seattle. And my uncle is a graduate of the Culinary Institute of America, and I was fortunate to ask him a bunch of questions and then also follow around a chef that I know here in Des Moines who's done work everywhere and is fantastic. And I will just say, It would have been bizarro if I'd had dialogue in the kitchen that was, well, golly gee, guys, what do you think about that? I mean, if you've ever worked in a kitchen, you know that it's not incredibly G-rated the way that people are talking, especially during the rush. So I tried to balance, you know, the truth-telling of it and also not try to be too distracting so that it gets in the way of the story.
No, I mean,
if we're talking about genre, you guys, it's not, you know, typically for rom-com, it would be very bizarre if I was just peppering the dialogue with with a lot of language. So I'm trying to move in the direction of where, you know, my I want to tell a story that doesn't yank the readers out at any point. And I feel like, you know, that's always a question. How do you do that truthfully, but at the same time, let the story be what it can be on its own?
Well, this story was, I loved it. I from the first modeling shots at the front of the book to that James, what a rat bastard he is. Oh, oh my God. I put him back on the effusive, nasty, dirty trash pile that he came from. Oh,
he was fun. He was fun to hate. There's always got to be somebody who's really kind of fun to.
Oh, absolutely.
Dislike.
That's why I love writing bad guys, because they're fun to hate.
Yeah, totally.
You know?
Much more fun than a good guy.
And sometimes their parts come out much better than the protagonist. Actually, when you think about it, you know. But James, he just was way too much.
Oh, I'm glad you didn't like him.
Oh.
There's a part in the book where the main character I won't give too much away, but she ruins a part of his apartment in a rather disgusting way.
Yes.
And I was not so sold on that. That kind of came out in first draft, and I thought, I don't know, I'm not sure, but all the beta readers were they were victorious when James got his comeuppance.
Something so satisfying. She should have hit his pants, too.
Yeah.
But she should have hit his pants, too. You know?
That would have been good. Yeah, in a public setting.
There you go.
He would have deserved that.
Yes, he did deserve it.
Yeah.
But actuality, she actually kind of should have known that was coming.
He painted
a great picture.
What's that?
He painted a great picture.
Yeah. Well, he was. Oh man, that's actually a plot point. Since we're all writers here, I struggled with that a little bit. In fact, if there's one thing I can pick apart with that, with the novel in its finished form, I was not fully. That's where the plot got a little sticky for me, that Grace, who is the main character, is smart and knows what she's doing in so many ways, but man, she sure fell hard for a big lie. And I guess I've gone back and forth about how, I'm sure you've done this too, you know, to try to encourage your character. You have to let them fail, you know, you have to let them crash hard.
Yes, yes.
But I don't know, that's a struggle for me to know how to do that in a way that is believable for the reader, but also allows for that kind of transformation. Do you know what I'm saying? I wanted her to have to work for the change, and at the same time, I was kind of yelling at her in my head the whole time.
Yeah. What an idiot. Stop doing that. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I mean, kind of what you were saying earlier, that the protagonist, you know, the main character sometimes is just, I don't know if we write that more from our perspective, and so it's familiar and it's harder to give that person a hard time because my main characters always have a little bit of me in them. It was not hard for me to give the jerk a hard time, but man, it's hard for me sometimes to let her fall down hard and have to pick herself up.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of it had to do with your protagonist, Grace, she's just a very nice girl, and she's kind of lost. She's not quite sure where she's supposed to be, and she had dreams of going back to New York, and I think that's where she got all screwed up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, she put the dream ahead of common sense.
Exactly.
That was so fun. That part of that book was so one of the things I loved about writing that book, there's this cohort of feisty grandmas who come.
Oh my God, they're so cool. The grandmas are like the best part of the book. They're just so cool.
It was just so much thinking fun to write those women. I live in Des Moines, and they're, you know, I don't know, I think we have about 600,000 or so that live in my city, and that's always been home to me when I've lived in Iowa. But my parents are from a very small town in northwest Iowa. My dad grew up in a town of 250 people.
Oh, wow.
And my mom grew up 7 miles away in a town of 1,000, and that was like...
The big city.
So, yeah.
They had 2 7-Elevens.
Right. Yeah, so I grew up going to those towns in the summer and riding my bike until the noon whistle blew. And then I'd go back home for lunch. And then I'd do it again until the 5 o'clock whistle blew. And then I'd go ahead and ride my bike back home to Grandma and Grandpa's house for dinner. So I got a taste of what it feels like to live in those small towns and to be surrounded by people who are... you know, working incredibly hard and committed to that community, committed to their families. It was just, I didn't know then that it was such a gift to be able to see that and to be a part of that. So writing those women, it came very naturally to me because I know those women. Those women are my grandmas. I have 2 phenomenal grandmas, and that was so fun for me to write them into the page. And then it was also super fun to be able to talk about that then with my editor who was in New York, and she loved those grandmas. And we got into lots of lovely conversations of, you know, if those people still exist and where are they? And so it was a joy for me to kind of put a little spotlight on that part of my state and my growing up.
Okay.
One of the things I wanted to ask you about is, you know, you've hooked up with some pretty big publishers, Simon & Schuster, and you're also in a lot of heavy-duty retail places. How long did it take you for your breakthrough to happen and to get to that next level, and how did that happen?
Well, I've been writing for 13 years, I think. About 13. My first book came out about 12, 13 years ago. And so about that long. Heartland came out last summer. So it's been a, you know, I mean, we can all, who's got the wine? Who can pour?
Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean, it's a long process. And I was grateful to have great publishers all along the way, and my agent's always good to say, you know, each project begets another project, right? So it's a gift to just keep going. And honestly, you know, 13 years ago the publishing business was very different than it is now, and so I truthfully just feel grateful that I get
okay.
to write stories. And
Kim, we have what? Bobby Jean with us finally. Bobby, are you there?
Hi, Bobby Jean. Oh, hi. You're all doing. It's so wonderful to hear you. I think I should just let you all talk. I've had just some challenges getting on the phone with you all tonight, but you really don't need me.
Oh, we always need
it's
you, girl.
It's lovely to have you. Well, I will just tell you that it was a wonderful book.
It was.
Oh, thank you. That's kind.
It was. We actually, Bobby and I actually spoke earlier about your book, and we did nothing but praise it.
Oh, that's so kind. I appreciate that.
Well,
I mean, you know,
if we're ones that call spades spades, and if the book kind of like not up to snuff, we'll kind of say that too. We don't say that very often because we get some great writers on this show, and you're one of them, actually.
I'm so glad I'm so glad you didn't hate it, because that would be a very long and awkward interview.
Well, you know, the truth is Bob and I are sitting here looking at each other. Bob and I are, we write westerns. We write action books.
Right, yeah.
And for us to read a romance novel is, man, that's a full stop, 180-degree turn and going back the other direction. You know, and a horse will only back up so far. Before they just finally say, no, the hell with you. I'm getting rid of you now.
Well, and I resist, you know, the unshirted cowboy on the cover. and who looks like Fabio with the damsel whose clothes are almost off as he's carrying her across the, you know, as a cover. Yeah, I do.
Are you getting this picture, Kim? Because I can tell you the truth. The truth is that he does look like Fabio, only he's about a foot and a half shorter.
My hair's
and the hair is really, really long on the sides, right over his ears.
But I got a picture of me with Fabio,
and he doesn't have a comb over.
Do you want to see my picture of me with Fabio?
I don't want to see that.
I have one. We ran into each other and chatted for a while.
So
I did want to ask you. You know, one of the things that young writers always think about, and they always think, okay, I got to get an agent. Which is one of the toughest things in the world. How did you score that particular situation?
Mm. Yeah, that's always the question, right? Mm-hmm. I had a little bit of a circuitous route to that. In fact, I sold my first two books without an agent. I went to a writer's conference. My mom, okay, I got to back up a little bit here, give some street cred to my mom. So I was done with grad school. Mark, my husband, was still in grad school. I was home with my eldest daughter, who's now 16, and she was a newborn, and we decided that being at home with her would be a good fit for me, and I really did enjoy it, but it was a big shift because I had been a high school Spanish and English as a second language teacher, and so I went from being around, you know, people who talked, and then around a newborn who was lovely, but not super communicative.
Well, yeah.
So Mark would come home and I would freak out and pepper him with questions and say things like, tell me all the long words you heard today.
And the wild words?
The long words. Anything over gaga.
Yeah. Anything that didn't end in like pee-pee, poopy, planky, poppy. And he got nervous because this became more insistent every day. He, incidentally, was in dental school, and so when I'd ask him to replay conversations, the conversations were dumb, you guys, but it didn't stop me. I kept asking. I said, oh, my gosh, really? So when he said he didn't floss,
oh my
what
God.
Did you say?
I can imagine the conversations he's hearing. I don't know.
But he was looking down in the mouth all the time.
Exactly. Dental dams and gum stuff, you know, dead in your mouth. Oh my God, how fun!
Yeah, I mean, first of all, gross, and also not very interesting conversation.
Yeah,
but that should tell you I was very eager to have that kind of input. So he was the one who started getting. He was a little nervous because I wasn't the woman he married, and he said, "What about, you know, a hobby of some kind? Because you're getting little scary at about 6 p.m. every night." And so I lugged out my old laptop. I'd always loved reading, but had never considered that I could write for anyone other than myself, which was fine. And I really just started writing for myself. Well, my mom got wind of this and was completely certain that the Pulitzer Committee was getting ready to call me. And so she put so much oxygen on this fire, and I entered a writing contest at the University of Iowa in their alumni magazine, and I won that contest, and that gave me enough courage to kind of start thinking about, you know, maybe I can do this. I am a firstborn. I am super deadline and responsibility oriented, and so I never would have done this for myself, but my mom that Christmas gave to me a ticket and a registration to go to a writer's conference in North Carolina. And when I opened the box at Christmas, I burst into tears. And I definitely could cry about that now if I thought about it too long, because she just was able to see that this was a real thing and this was a real dream. And I would never have had the chutzpah to do that myself. But she did. And so I headed down there, and that's actually how I sold my first two books. I met an editor there who was encouraging to me and who liked the little tiny, you know, partial that I showed to her. And she said, go home, finish the novel. When you're done, send it to me. Put my name all over the cover letter so that it doesn't end up in a slush pile. And I did. And a few months later, they called. And so those books were sold without an agent. I actually ended up meeting my agent at a conference a couple years later on a bus, on one of those conference buses. And my friend Ginger, who's so dear, she said to me, "Look over there, that's Chip McGregor. You should go meet him. He's starting his new agency, and he's so great." And so she introduced me, and he's been my agent ever since.
Cool.
Wow.
That's a great story. Yeah. How much of it is really true? No.
So, Kimberly, in the book, Grace refers to her dream as the dream. And it sounds like you shared a different dream, but the same kind of the dream, passionate, totally focused on what you wanted to do. How much of Grace is you?
Oh, that's so dear. I've never thought of that, and I've never made that connection. You're right. I had that too. I think Grace is much more, first of all, she came to it earlier, and also she was itching to get out of Dodge. She wanted to get out of her hometown and, you know, stake her claim elsewhere. I have a serious amount of wanderlust myself, but I'm tethered happily to home. And so I love to travel, and we've lived all over. My husband and I started our marriage in Costa Rica, where we taught in a school. And so I've loved wandering, and I've loved living in different places, but I don't know that I didn't resent home the way that Grace did. I don't know. Don't you all feel that all of our main characters have, I always feel like any writer who says, "Oh no, there's nothing of me in there," or "There's nothing my family," or "Nothing of my experience in there." I think they're lying.
Well, they would be, because that's definitely part of when you write, especially when you put together your protagonist and you make your hero. You know, your hero is always you, and it's always the way you see you. You know, I except Bob. You know, Bob.
I wrote a memoir. So I'll
okay. Well, we'll do that. Yeah, but you know, Kimberly, we have to take a couple minutes here and sell some stuff. So please don't go away. And Bobby Jean, I'm hoping beyond hope that you have your ad with you.
I do.
Well,
I hope I can be heard. Okay, I'm just on my cell phone tonight.
You're fine.
Out West Shop offers 30 deals, 30 days shopping extravaganza. From now until June 16th, a new deal is posted on the Out West Shop Facebook page and on the website, www.outwestshop.com. To browse all the specials, just enter the word deal in the search box. Limited quantity, and you don't want a dally. 50% of the retail price of each deal is donated to the musical trio The Cowboy Way, featuring author Jim Jones. He's part of that group and was on the show not long ago. Well, these guys have launched an Indiegogo campaign to make a documentary in Scotland and in the West called It's the Cowboy I Will Be. And they are raising money, and it's a way that we're trying to help them. If you have questions, call us toll-free, or you'd like personal assistance at 1-877-340-9378. And remember, it's always a great day out west.
Yes, it is. And, you know, if you're planning a trip and there's no way you can take your canine buddy, how about considering All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepover? That's right. All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepover is the premium place for your four-legged friends to spend their time away from you. If you want a place where you know your buddy will be safe and have lots of attention, being able to play with other dogs, goats, sheep, horses, and more humans, then All Dogs Rule is the place for you. Acres of play space, grass, orange trees, and the gorgeous Sespe River, all with no stress and extras if you want, you just need ask. When your dog returns home, you'll have to ask whose vacation was better, yours or the dog's, and we all know whose vacation was better, the dog. So check them out, their website at alldogsrule.com, or give them a call at 805-524-1100. And I know Russ and Karen will love you for it, because they just got married last Saturday, so they're pretty stoked. So we congratulate them, Russ and Karen. Congratulations. And give All Dogs Rule a call, 805-524-1100. And now, this is the one that we all, Kimberly, you'll like this. Bobby, you'll like this. When Creative Edge Publicity was founded in 2016, they immediately showed that they weren't the same as other publicity firms. They work closely with their individual clients' needs and goals and push harder to get them noticed. Creative Edge believes that communication is an important part of the partnership, and that model is how they built their success. They collaborate and work with local, national, and international media outlets and organizations to meet their clients' goals. So Creative Edge, it's your brand and your future. Mickey Mickelson and Avery Olive are the publicists, and you can find them at Creative Edge on the website. Just go to Google and Google Creative Edge Publicity, and they'll take you right there. And I happen to know three people who are with Creative Edge right now. That would be me and Bob Brill and yourself. So, Miss
True Story, he's great.
That's true, Miss Stewart. You are a Mickey person.
I am a Mickey person.
You are.
Sure. He's fantastic.
He is really truly, isn't he? And just the nicest guy. So if
he's
you're not
so nice, and he works so hard, so yeah.
And he's very reasonable, I have to say.
I agree.
Okay.
Yeah, he works really hard and does a great job.
So,
hi, Mickey. We love you.
Yes, we do, Mickey. So what is, I have a real quick question for you. What is it like to write a Tom Hanks, Meg Ryan book in the age of 50 Shades and 50 Shades again and more 50 Shades and well, you know, all the sex, drugs, and romping around that they have out on the market these days?
Totally. You know, I feel like it comes back to what we talked about a little bit at the beginning, that I think all of us, no matter our genre, we have to have our eyes fixed on a true north. And so, you know, the winds shift in publishing. In the 13 years I've been doing it, there have been all sorts of sometimes hilarious trends that publishers will chase frantically. And then all of a sudden they're gone. And so I feel like and I'm not at all saying 50 Shades is going anywhere. I'm saying that I kind of have to have a little bit of fortitude to think, okay, you know, everybody, there's room for lots of different stories. You're right that 50 Shades actually threw a loop for sure in the publishing world for my genre because, you know, I think a lot of times beginner writers, I certainly thought this was more of an art than a business. And that is not entirely true. Publishing is absolutely a business.
Oh, well, for sure.
And publishers who purchase your book are not saying, oh, we just really feel like this, we're connected to this piece of art. That might happen. You know, that's lovely if it does on their end. But they are saying, we think we can sell this. Your advance is completely mm-hmm. indicative of how many copies they think they can sell.
Right.
And so that was a process for me to come to just, you know, not only accept that, but to figure out how to work with that. And so sometimes, you know, some years honestly have been much leaner than others. And the 50 Shades phenomenon was a rough, it was a rough patch.
Yeah.
We shopped Sugar, which is the book right before Heartland. And, I got 39 no's to that manuscript before I got a yes. And the yes actually was one of the big six they called. And it was lovely because you don't hear from those people. And, I had never received an offer from, an old venerated, you know, one of the big dogs. And mm-hmm. so my agent called with the offer and he said, you know, good news, it's from these guys, bad news, the terms are horrible, and kind of delineated what that meant. And then he said, but I want you to know there's an editor there who really loves this story and she really thinks she can sell the story. But when she went to marketing said, okay, we can offer her such a bigger advance and a bigger piece of the royalties, and we can sell the socks off of this if she will do two things. She needs to add in a lot of sex with a lot of different people. The main character has to have sex with a lot of different people, and the sex has to be pretty raunchy. And again, this is totally on the, this is on the, on, you know, this was a few months after 50 Shades just totally took off, and they were, those books were just flying off the shelves. And so again, that was a business discussion, right?
Right.
I cried. I'll admit I cried because I thought, oh my gosh, I'm born in the wrong era.
Yeah.
I'm Lucille Ball.
And I have to write sex now. Oh no.
No, that's not why I cried.
And my my two grandmas are not happy about
this. Yeah. And grandma's going to get mad at me about the barn talk.
Especially when you have grandma having sex.
My grandma probably think that was hilarious. But I felt, first of all, it was a little bit insulting to say to someone who, you know, just plop this stuff in there, willy-nilly. I mean, that's not how it works.
No,
I've written a whole book,
hardly.
But I'm just kind of like, you know, put a few chapters in where all of a sudden she's ripping off her clothes. It doesn't even work with the story.
No.
So, after I licked my wounds, though, and remembered this is absolutely a business conversation. They are nervous, right? They are nervous to do, it's a big risk to publish a book. And they know that they lower the risk if they mimic 50 Shades because that's hot right now, right? That's flying off the shelves. So anyway, I said no to that offer and did wonder if I was just not so smart because, you know, I could have gotten my foot in that house's door, but I just did not feel it's not the book I wanted to write. And
sure.
I didn't want to sign with people who said yes, except for, you know, I really wanted people to be excited about the book. You know, they publish so many a year. I need to have at least a little organizational enthusiasm on the front end that they liked the book. So I said no. And happily that was not the end of the story. We got a fantastic, lovely experience with Skyhorse, also in New York. They did a great job. That book got covered all over the place, and it also got into Target stores nationwide. So I tell that story to aspiring authors because I want you to know, anyone listening who's in that camp, there, keep on, press on. You know, sometimes it's not going to look the way you thought.
All right.
And sometimes you're going to have a little bit of a spine for your own book. You're the only advocate for that book that understands the first to the last page. And I don't know, I think sometimes we give up too early instead of maybe looking around the next corner. And it's not a business for the faint of heart.
No.
Nothing when it comes to the creative world is.
Better go be an accountant.
Exactly.
You know, I'm kind of curious, as in the current climate, do you find it's easier to work in the type of romance field? I mean, all the publishing fields are overcrowded, but do you find it's easier to work in this particular romance field rather than some of the other romance fields? What I mean by that is the field that you write in.
Right.
I mean, every other year, other than the last 6 months, I would say, there are rumblings in the business and even in TV and film people that have been talking with my agent and with me. They are finally, in the last 6 months, I've heard some encouragement in my genre. I mean, in general, I've been the weirdo the whole time because I'm doing just a little bit off, you know, my characters are a little quirky. When I write for Christian fiction, I'm a little bit too wild and a little too, my characters are a little too flawed, a little too real. When I've written for mainstream fiction, I'm a little too Pollyanna and a little too clean. So I've felt my whole career that I've got a foot in two different worlds. I'm trying to bridge those. So I don't think I've ever felt like I was totally on, figuring out my way and being super embraced by it.
Sure.
But in the last 6 months to a year, I have heard that there's a little bit of an appetite growing for rom-com, both in books and in film and in TV. And those kind of all, sometimes those are all in cahoots together, you know, that trifecta.
Oh, absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
Yeah, so we'll see. I don't know. You know, it's all fun and games till I see a contract. but
well, you know, it's
but I'm cautiously optimistic.
I think it's terrific the way you just kind of you're kind of like hanging out on the outside of most every box you write in, you know, and that's your feelings, and so you can tell when you're writing, you can tell in the way you write that you're putting everything you've got into it, and it's like public be damned, this is a good story.
Wow, what a compliment! Thank you, I appreciate that.
Oh well, you're welcome. I mean, I wouldn't tell you if I didn't mean it. Well, I might, well, but probably not.
You might. I don't know.
He might. He actually likes you. So.
Well, we like all of our writers, Bob.
Yeah, that is true.
We have a question here that we ask all of our writers, and I don't know if Bobby Jean is sitting there still, wondering when she's going to be able to have an opportunity to say something. Would you like to ask the question, Bobby Jean?
Sure. So, Kimberly, do you experience writer's block? And if you do, what do you do about it? And if you don't, what do you think? Is it a real thing or not?
Oh, I think it's a thing. I think it's a thing for sure. I think we get in our way in myriad ways, right? There's so many ways we can get in the way of our own work and being creative. And sometimes that's self-imposed, sometimes it's outwardly imposed. I would say when I have felt like I'm in a rut or in a spot where I cannot think of anything worthwhile, I step away. And I know I cringe a little bit to say that because, you know, if you're writing for your supper, it's hard to step away. You know, you need to, it's hard to, that's an indulgence. To take time away. But boy, if it's at all possible, I really try to let things lie fallow. Listen to me, I'm such an Iowa girl giving an agricultural metaphor. But there's some truth there. There's some truth there, right? You let things go for a while.
Yeah.
I guess that's farm language, right?
Yeah, she is. Yeah.
So I mean, sometimes that just means going to another part of the house and, or going for a walk with the dog or going to do something completely not writerly, for an hour or even for the rest of the day. And sometimes for me, it's longer. These last two books came out pretty close together. And when I was done with Heartland, I was done with a capital D. In fact, I said to Mark, my husband, for the first time, I said, I think I'm out. I think that was it. 8 novels, great. Oh. That was so fun. And I am done. I just can't do it anymore.
No, you can't quit.
You're super.
Well, and I know you want that book to end. I want to know what happens next.
You're so sweet. But I know you three can identify with just being like, I can't do. Why didn't I go into basket weaving or, you know, something, painting houses, something with a beginning and a middle and an end? It feels overwhelming. And honestly, for me, if I'm being totally honest, it's not just the writing itself can feel freeing sometimes. It's that I know at the end of that book, and we haven't even touched on this, but the entire process of marketing and being out there
on
social media and connecting constantly in that regard is exhausting.
It is. It is.
And so it is. Mm-hmm. It is. And so I just needed time and it took a while. This time it took a while. I just started a new book last week and that's a long time for me to go, but I'm excited about it and I'm feeling, I'm really looking forward to writing, which that doesn't happen. I think there is a little bit of an urban legend that when you write, you have your ascot that you put on and sit by your roaring fire and you swirl your sherry and the muse takes over. And I have not had very many of those moments.
I've never had a moment like that.
Said by a true romance writer.
Right, though? I mean, I think there is a little bit of a myth about that. So sometimes maybe what we call writer's block is just absolutely normalcy.
Oh, right? I think
there's
so
just
too.
The day, mm-hmm. yeah, you know, the day didn't go great.
Right.
You know? That's okay.
We just call it a writer's pause.
I try to be as kind to myself as I would be to my kids. You know, if my kids came to me and said, I wrote 1,000 words of drivel today, I definitely would not say to them, well, I guess you know now, you will never be an author.
Oh.
That is the end. I would never say that to them, but I say it to myself. You know?
Sure. But then you tell your kids, too, when they come to you and say, I wrote 1,000 words of drivel. Then you say, well, let's see. Edited, that's probably 125 words of good writing. You know?
Right. Mm-hmm. There's something in there.
Sure. There's something in everything.
Yep. Right.
So
Taking time away, giving yourself some grace, and knowing that if you are wired to do this gig, it's going to come back. You're going to be okay. Don't panic. I think panicking makes it worse. I mean, I know some friends who, you know, write the most outlandish thing. I took a course one time at the University of Iowa. They have such a wonderful writer's workshop, and they do summer writing festivals where you can just go for a weekend. And the whole weekend, the entire course is called The Middle of the Novel. And if I had to put any bets, I would say probably most of our blocked moments come in the middle of the novel.
Oh, I would absolutely agree with you there.
Is over.
Sure.
You know, you're done with the initial excitement. You're not closing in on the end where you can just see the horizon and you are almost there. That middle can be a slog. And so, you know, there are so many good resources, and that class was one of them. First of all, just the camaraderie of talking with other writers who said, been there, believe me.
Yep.
I know what this is. You're not a total freak that you're in the middle of this novel and thinking, this is horrendous, I'll never get out. So the camaraderie is great, but also just writing. The professor asked us all sorts of questions, like, what's something your main character never would do? Okay, write that. What's something that, you know, you're not expecting at all? Just do that.
Right.
Write the next chapter in another, you know, in a completely different POV, a totally different point of view, and know that you're not going to use it. But you don't know what will shake loose.
Sure.
You know? So, I don't know. Sometimes those things help me. But I'd say in general, going for a walk and letting it go and not thinking about it for a while. Not sitting and thinking, this is not working.
Well, unfortunately, I am tasked with keeping my eyeball on the clock, and we are out of time.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I rambled.
No, that's okay. You know, this was your show. You could say anything you wanted, except farm words. Can't say farm words. No, you can say anything
you want. It's internet.
Right.
Go ahead.
Anyway, you know what? Thank you so much for going out and sitting in your car and joining us. It's been great having you. It's been a delight talking to you.
So what are you driving?
Yeah, what kind of car are you sitting in?
Well, I will tell you, it is so hot in here. I really love you guys because I am sweating on your behalf.
Well, you must love us. No, I believe that's called glowing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a glow. Wrong word.
Right.
I'm glowing.
Okay.
Oh, hilarious. Minivan, obviously. You don't need to even wonder. A minivan.
Yeah, wife, three kids, yeah.
Iowa.
Yeah, Iowa. Tractor with a hit trailer on the back.
No, I just work it out of space. I live in Iowa.
can you give our audience your email address and your website, if you wouldn't mind?
I would love to. You can find me at KimberlyStewart.com. That's KimberlyStewart, and then StewartCom. And there's all sorts of stuff there. You can email me through there. I also connect with lots of people on Instagram and Facebook, so I'd love to see you.
I did keep up my word. I did send you 2 mugs today, and a copy, and a copy of That's All You Get.
Oh, I'm so excited! Thank you. That's super kind. I can't wait to get them.
Oh, and well, and I even signed it and wrote a little something inside for you. So.
Oh, I love it. Thank you. I appreciate that, Jim.
Well, you're very welcome, Kimberly, and we enjoyed having you. And you can
stick around.
Thank
you for having me.
Well, we love having you. And you can stick around because we're going to end the show right now. But, you know, why not just hang out for another minute or so?
Okay, sounds good.
And next week we have someone equally as fun to talk with is Peggy Chambers, who is the author of such wonderful tomes as Witch's Cliff and Gloam Valley and the return to Gloam Valley and the secrets of Sand Hill Island and the stones of Sand Hill Island. And she's just got all kinds of things going on. And she'll be joining us next week, along with Bob Brill and myself and Russ Avison. And Mr. Henry Park will be in the studio with
us.
Oh,
cool.
Really?
Oh, really? We have a whole
And we're thinking seriously about stretching next week's show out for 2 hours.
Oh, okay, cool.
And because we have so much to talk about, because next week is our last live show for about two and a half months. We're going to be on hiatus, so we want to make sure the Writer's Block will continue. The Writer's Block will be on the air every week as normal, but it's going to be the best of. And Bobby Jean, if you have anyone, any particular shows that you want to see go on the air, you need to let me know pretty quick.
Oh, okay. Okay, I have a couple. Yeah, I got a couple in mind. Okay.
Okay. And and next week should prove out to be a pretty fun show. Of course, you know, with all of us here, I think that's a first. So, at any rate, of course, I'm sad that we're leaving the studio. But, of course, I'm moving to Idaho, so the commute is a little tough. Might as well be in outer space, huh, Bob?
Iowa, Idaho, all these I places.
All the I words. All right. So, that being said, our thanks again go to Kimberly Stewart, who I don't know if is still on the line. If you're still there, Kimberly?
I am.
Okay.
For sure.
And Bobby Jean Bell, who we finally got on the air tonight. Of course, live radio, you never know what's going to happen.
Yes, Bob, so happy to have had a chance to be on.
We loved having you, as always. And, of course, Bob Brill and myself, Jim Christina, for the Writer's Block and LA Talk Radio. We are out of here.